Jamanan see me call it up and I miss a two. I tell nobody kick off your show, I miss a three. I tell you not see a baby, I miss a four. Me let nobody kick off me door, I miss a five. I tell you if you slip your will slide, I miss a six. I mean I'm sister Nancy, I miss a seven. But every man won't go whatever, miss a eight. But I tell you not see lay your damn straight, I miss a nine. Jamanan this your lyrics, you are mine, I miss a ten. Got a little friend, say sister Nancy, come again. Me do not to borrow and me do not to lend. Cause anything me borrow, me I get it back tomorrow. And anything me lend, me I forget it back again. Slang, 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 dang, dilly. Me saw me walking down the street, two man I meet.
WCRS 98.3 102.1. This is Fight Back with Bob Fitragus and Connie Goodell Newton.
And this is Bob Fitragus, and that was, of course, Connie Goodell Newton.
Hello.
And in the studio, once again, for the second straight week, we have Cliff Arnebeck. Cliff Arnebeck, local election integrity attorney. Cliff, when last you were here, you were filing subpoenas against Karl Rove. What happened on Monday?
On Monday, we had a hearing before the Ohio Elections Commission in which we argued that Karl Rove and the Chamber of Commerce were involved in a coordinated racketeering conspiracy to steal.
Racketeering, that sounds like organized crime, Cliff.
And that's its virtue. It's organized. Very effective that way. And they are stealing this election. And we allege that. And at that point, what we knew was that they were doing coordinated advertising on a massive scale to tilt the scales against Democratic candidates in this election cycle. This wasn't just going on in Ohio. It was going on all over the country. Now, what people have been talking about is saying, well, aren't they allowed to do that under this Citizens United mm-hmm. decision? And the answer is no. They're not allowed to do it because it's coordinated. What Citizens United allows is independent expenditures, even by corporations. That's permitted under Citizens United. That means people who have some interest, like Right to Life or Choice, who want to say right within the election time frame, we oppose or we favor this candidate because of their support or opposition to this particular issue. They're not talking about special interests, massive corporate interests, billionaires, who want to advertise to in coordination with the candidates to get the candidates elected who will be a subservient to that special interest. That's called coordinated expenditure. It's the equivalent of a campaign contribution, an in-kind campaign contribution. It is illegal under the even under the Citizens United decision.
My question is, if Citizens United is a court case that allows corporations to advertise, is it too early right now for there to be regulations that actually specify what they are and are not allowed to do? I mean, have they actually broken any law yet if basically what came out was a Supreme Court case?
They have broken the law, and it happened. They admitted it. They admitted breaking the law. On the very day, Sunday, October 24th, the day that we served Karl Rove as he entered the studio, Karl Rove said, "Yes, I've been asking for the money." Now, that would be all right if Karl Rove was an independent. Now, Karl Rove may be a lot of things, but an independent, he is not.
And what's the relationship of this money being anonymous? Is that a problem at all?
Well, that's a tip-off that it's a criminal activity. If you're involved in a legitimate activity, you should be proud of the fact that you're advocating in support of the candidate that you're supporting. Or you should be proud of the fact that you're criticizing somebody who's not a good candidate. The fact that they're hiding it indicates that it's criminal activity. It's a special interest that does not want to be known because they have a special interest. And if you said, this is Enron telling you to vote this way, or this is Goldman Sachs vote for George. He's one of us. You would, it would have just, it would have the boomerang effect. And that's why it's, the identity is being hidden.
Okay, so on November 1st, day before the election, you go to the Ohio Election Commission. For full disclosure, I was there with you. Got to sit at the table there and witness a little history. And the vote was 3-1. You got one vote for
probable. Were you, about half the press corps there, Bob?
I think about the only one that wrote about it. So 3-1, and then one of the reasons it appeared to be a 3-1 vote, other than the fact that there were two Republicans there that gave him two votes right away, Republican appointments to the Ohio Election Commission, the key factor, it seemed like Brad Smith, the attorney for the Partnership for Ohio's Future, a chamber affiliate, said that you could just have the information. They weren't hiding nothing. What happened next?
Well, after we left the hearing room, we had a discussion. When are you going to send this stuff? Where are you going to send it to me? By email. And I was assured that they were going to send it. I said, email? We're going to send it. I said, email? We have your address. Well, they did send it. They put it in regular mail that would arrive 2 days after the election.
Yeah, it came on Wednesday, the day after the election.
Right.
Do you think that was intentional?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So, you don't win at the Ohio Election Commission. What did you do then?
Let's go back one. You said there was one reason that we lost.
There was
a second reason.
Okay.
The meeting was being managed not by the chairman of the commission, who was a Democrat. It was being managed by Phil Richter, who's the executive director and counsel to the commission. And Phil Richter is a very, very strong Republican. And he was manipulating the process by giving erroneous and deceptive advice to the commission members, particularly to the Democrats. And officially recommending, supposedly as an objective lawyer giving objective legal advice to his client, recommending that the complaint be dismissed, that there wasn't sufficient evidence. He tried to limit the presentation to 5 minutes. He tried to limit the rebuttal to about 1 minute. This is all we were talking about is a coup d'etat against the government of the states and the federal government of this country.
Well, that's a strong statement, a coup d'etat, and I assume it's not a left-wing coup d'etat here. Why is it a coup? What was happening?
What was happening is a coordinated plan and in process of execution to take control of the not just the governments of the states and the Congress for the next 2 years, but the bodies that would control the reapportionment process, mm-hmm. and the drawing of the lines for state legislatures and the Congress, congressional districts, for the next 10 years.
It was interesting. This election, it looked like all three of the state offices went to Republicans, and then I don't know about the other two, but isn't that the apportionment board? The apportionment board is the Secretary of State, the Attorney General,
and the
State Auditor.
No.
And then
No.
What is it?
Secretary of State, Governor, and Auditor.
Okay, it's not the Attorney General.
No.
It's the Governor. So they were all Republicans. The two people in this, it was the
others
Ohio,
are
the
connected to the legislature, but it's an even balance between Democrat and Republican.
The variable
is the who gets the majority of the governor, auditor, and secretary of state. Mm-hmm. Those three offices.
Okay. And they won every single statewide office.
No, they didn't.
The Republican. Okay, what do you mean, no, they didn't?
Well, they were reported in this initial count. They were reported as having won. In fact, based upon the, as we said in that hearing, Bob, together, the Columbus Dispatch has a poll. It's while it's prior to the election, it's done in a scientific way, and it has a history, a proven history of accuracy that's comparable to the accuracy of exit polling. And as we all know, if we haven't been brainwashed by Karl Rove by now, it, as if that under the international gold standard for detection of fraud in an election is an exit poll. And the Columbus Dispatch, because it's a written poll, because of the proximity before the closeness to the election, it has achieved a reputation as being comparable to an exit poll. The only difference, the only caveat, is that it's because it's before the election. If there's some dramatic event that takes place between that last week or whatever, the last 2 weeks of the election and the election day, then it would throw it off. And that happened rather dramatically in 2000, when Justice Resnick had been subjected to $7 million of illegal corporate attack advertising. And on the day before the Election Commission had ruled that that advertising was illegal and was false and defamatory. And that finding was reported all over the state. Every state newspaper reported that finding. And that resulted in a swing of 18 points from the Dispatch pre-election poll to the result reported on election day.
It seemed like something similar happened with, I think it was the probate judge, Alan Acker. It seemed like he was a shoo-in. Basically, he was appointed after somebody else got promoted. Eric Brown got promoted when the other
Chief Justice Moyer died.
When Justice Moyer died.
That's right, Ohio Supreme Court Chief Justice.
So Judge Acker was the probate judge and an appointee for probably a pretty short period of time, a few months before the election, and he ran for re-election. And I saw a story in the Dispatch that that there was he had a controversial case where he let a young couple get married.
They were 17.
So
she would be 18 in 3 months, and she was pregnant, and her family wanted her to have an abortion.
Right.
She wanted to get married.
That actually happened to my mom. My mom was 17 when she was pregnant with me and got married and was emancipated. And then I was born, and she was married to my father.
So in the ultimate sense, Judge Acker was pro-choice. He allowed the young woman to make her decision 3 months shy of being 18 years old. And oddly,
She chose that she wanted to have the child too. You know, it was a pro-choice decision, but she actually chose to have the child as a young mother.
So it was both a pro-choice and a pro-life decision.
And that's the same choice that my mother made as a young mother as well. So I think that, I mean, that shows that you can trust.
And the Dispatch ran a very nasty article, a front page above the fold, about how this essentially awful judge took away the parental rights.
Well, it's interesting.
The rights of the parents to control their daughter who wanted to make her own decision. And I think that Judge Acker was right in trusting that woman to make a decision about her own life.
And he's since given an interview saying he'd do the same thing again.
Yeah. Are you saying that Judge Acker lost because of this?
I do think he did. Yeah, I think it was one of those last-minute events that you were talking about that, you know, going back to the Dispatch poll, that it's very accurate. It's a predictive poll. But since it's before the election, last minutes can kind of change or skew the results. So,
sure, particularly incredibly negative articles on the front page above the fold that portray you and in many ways is doing negative things.
Yeah, I think publicity.
It's called scandalizing a candidate.
Yeah. Sure, you scandalize them, and it's called the Dispatch doing PR for, Mr. Montgomery.
If I'm not mistaken, the family that was making the complaint against the judge is a Republican, not just a Republican family, the family of a lawyer, a Republican lawyer, who represents the Republican Party.
All right, so the Dispatch doing their job. So mainly, if no major interventions, you're going to get accurate polls. Occasionally, you'll get, it's a snapshot in history. If something intervenes, like the Daily Monopoly known as the Dispatch, or as we used to like to call it, at the Columbus Alive, back before it was owned by the Dispatch, the Wolf Family Newsletter, tells you who's a bad candidate. So then election day, but after the election commission, did you not go to federal court?
Yes, we did. We filed, they went to, I served subpoenas on the Ohio Chamber of Commerce and the Partnership for Ohio's Future. And the Partnership for Ohio's Future, this is after they had agreed, if you recall, Bob, they had agreed to produce this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it didn't come, so I filed the subpoenas. And so then
that's
I get
roughly around 11:30 on
right.
Monday.
And then I get a call from Brad Smith. Yeah, 11:30, I served the subpoenas. The subpoenas ordered or commanded the chamber to produce this information by 2 p.m.
And where did you find the Partnership for Ohio's Future?
In the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, of course.
There's a shock.
And so I got a call from Brad Smith at 1:30 saying, I'm working on this right now. I should have it by 2, but in any event, for sure, by 3. And I said, that will be fine.
And Brad Smith is the former head of the Federal Election Commission?
That he is, and was representing both the Ohio Chamber and the Partnership for Ohio's Future. So it got to be about 3:10, and I called Brad on his cell phone, and he said, oh, I'm standing here right now with the courier. He's going to bring this over to you, Cliff. It'll be there in a few minutes. It came at 3:30. A young man comes in, delivers an envelope. I said, thank you very much. Opened the envelope, and instead of the list of contributors...
Anthrax? Was there anthrax in it, Cliff?
No.
White powder?
No,
what
no.
was it?
Damn you, Ken Allebeck and William Patrick III. No, go ahead, Cliff.
A motion to quash the subpoena.
What about the list?
Not there. So at that point, I drafted a motion, a memorandum contra, the motion to quash. I called the court chambers, the federal court chambers, and indicated I would be filing something, and I was requesting a hearing at the soonest possible time. Court chambers, the district judge advised that the magistrate judge would handle it. I called the magistrate judge chambers. He indicated that we would have a hearing in the afternoon as soon as I could get the other parties on the line. So I filed the memorandum contra, and in which I said that the under the King Lincoln case, which is in federal court, the stay had been lifted for the purpose of taking Mike Connell's deposition and any other depositions that the parties agreed upon based upon the Connell deposition. And under the authority of that order, and further under the authority of a directive from the Secretary of State, that any matters addressing fraud in the current election should be addressed directly to her, I had received her permission to subpoena these records from the Chamber of Commerce. So under the authority of those two things, I said we had subpoenaed these folks, and it was important that they comply. And we had a hearing by telephone with Brad Smith, Rich Coglianese on behalf of the Secretary of State, myself on behalf of the plaintiffs in the case, and the before Magistrate Judge Kemp. And at that point, Brad Smith again said, well, all you had to do is send us a letter, and we're going to provide this. And I said, you're going to send it by email now? I'm going to call Ms. Wogan, and she will and tell her to send it to you right now by email. And it arrived about 15 minutes after that, and it was a rather shallow compliance. Because
what do you mean? What did Ms. Wobegon send you?
She sent a list of names without the amounts of money.
Mm. What exactly had you requested, Cliff?
I requested the names of the contributors, the amount of the contribution, the date of the contribution.
Ah, she could have put that in a spreadsheet.
And I also said, with respect to the Ohio Chamber of Commerce, I wanted the same information of any contributor to their fund, to any fund that was then available to be donated to the Partnership for Ohio's Future. Because what the chamber has been doing in the past, and this has been going on since 2000, what they have done is have a list of names of companies, and then they'll have the Ohio Chamber of Commerce making a contribution to its own front group, and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce making a contribution to the front group.
Cliff, tell me more. What is Partnership for Ohio's Future? Is that a nonprofit?
It's a nonprofit corporation that is nothing but a front group for the Ohio Chamber.
Oh, okay.
Or as they say, an affiliate. But front's probably more accurate. Okay, so they really pumped in $3 million, more than $3 million, into the races for the Supreme Court. This flood of money that comes from these groups, aren't they simply buying the election, and doesn't that make for a cynical electorate causing people even like our own, Connie Goodell Newton, to question the very process itself? Isn't this polluting and destroying what small remnant of democracy we had left in a competitive system?
Yes, we have a monopoly, a Republican monopoly on the Ohio Supreme Court. And how can you not have a monopoly when all the money, you know, this overwhelming amount of money is going to the Republican side? It was $1.45 million of TV advertising spent by the Partnership for Ohio's Future. And you say people get cynical because they see this going on. They don't see it going on. They see contribution paid for, not authorized by a candidate or a candidate committee.
Paid for by the Partnership for Ohio's Future.
And you're thinking, well, that's just some special interest. I'm not special interest. Some public interest group. Just a group of people, you know, partnering together to advocate for candidates and saying nice things about these particular candidates. And in many races, and particularly judicial races, it's so much a function of voter recognition of a name.
Mm-hmm. So, like with Citizens United, if Pepsi decided they wanted to endorse a candidate, maybe for a good reason, maybe for a bad reason, would you see an ad that said, vote for Bob Fetrakis, he's the alternative one, drink Pepsi? I mean, you wouldn't see that, right? You would see something like, something maybe misleading, like the Partnership for Ohio's Future, which Pepsi is maybe giving all of its money to, right? So are you saying that they're setting up special corporations just to be corporations that donate to political candidates and political parties or issues?
Special interests who are hiding their identity in order to appear to be speaking in a public spirit, and when in fact all they're doing is trying to advocate for their own greed and profit.
In the long tradition of the mob, right? It's a front.
Exactly.
You create this front with a good-sounding name, right? Think about here locally. Columbus Citizens for Good Government.
That
sounds
really super.
It was limited brand.
That sounds
and
really
nationwide
super.
Insurance.
Yeah.
It was the largest corporations in the city.
But don't you want good government, Bob?
Columbus. I want
aren't
very
you,
good
aren't
government.
Aren't you a Columbus citizen for good government? Because I am. Are you?
I'm
Everybody
sure.
is. We all should be.
Now let's go back to 2000. 2000 is the last year that we have any information about the source of the U.S. chamber money in one of these Supreme Court races in Ohio. There were four contributors: Walmart, Home Depot, Daimler Chrysler, and American Insurance Council or something. All of them.
Was is das Daimler Chrysler?
All of them are either foreign corporations or foreign influenced corporations.
Hmm.
Walmart, what do they sell? Chinese manufactured products. What does Home Depot sell? Chinese manufactured products. Who is the American Council of Insurers? AIG, founded in Asia.
And what about, Daimler Chrysler, wasn't that?
German.
That's the same people that own Mercedes-Benz.
Exactly. They had bought Chrysler and they controlled it.
Why isn't that illegal? If Daimler writes a check, aren't they acting as a foreign agent?
I believe it is illegal. And in fact, the Lloyd Mahaffey of the UAW told me directly that they had confronted the Chrysler bargaining people in negotiations, and they were assured that this decision came from Germany, not from the United States.
All right. So not only are we being overwhelmed by money, but money that has interest in China and direct foreign money.
Eliminating jobs in this country and creating jobs in China. Now, that may be fine. I mean, Brad Smith, Tom Donahue says that's fine. But see if that'll sell with the American public.
All right, that's the question. What do you think of all this, Connie? Makes you want to go out and vote?
Well, I know of a lot of people who have said, you know, not to vote. And I do, I voted. I support voting in a way. But I think that, you know, there are a lot of Democrats right now in Ohio who I'm sure are pretty upset. Like, the diehard Democrats are pretty upset about the election. And I know some people are very upset about the election, that it went to so many Republicans.
But it didn't.
Well, besides that,
even better, we don't know who it went to, because you've got private, for-profit, Republican loyalists secretly counting the vote, providing the hardware, providing the software, running the electronic poll books, servicing
the
computer.
So that's a reason. That's a reason maybe
Total
why you wouldn't vote. That's maybe why a reason why you wouldn't vote, because, you know, it's like, why even bother voting if your vote's going to get stolen, for one thing? I do think people should vote. I mean, there are plenty of reasons not to. And one of the best reason not to is because the more important thing that you can do is what you do every day in life that's political. But I do think that you should vote because it is just one day. Policies
Why?
That...
Convince me.
Politicians that are elected create policies that do have an effect on our everyday lives. Policy does have effect on people. And I think that, you know, we can kind of neutralize some of the effect of the bad policies that politicians impose on the American people. It's really even more important than voting. It is important to be an activist and to act on your sphere of influence to help others and to help yourself as well. So I do think voting is important. I would never tell somebody not to vote because of the struggles that some of us have had to be able to vote. And that's why I do appreciate the work that Cliff and other election lawyers, me, Bob, and Cliff are doing. Is because, you know, my great-grandmother didn't have the right to vote, and there are women who fought and died for that right to vote. And I think of that every election cycle when I think, like, well, I'm an activist. I do a lot of other things that are important. And, you know, voting and the elections, and no matter what happens, that's not the most important day of the year. So it's important to do other stuff, but... You know, we have to fight for our rights. We have to fight back.
And we have to fight in the streets, because your voting really doesn't matter. What really matters is actually running someone who's an activist, who has a different point of view, who doesn't care about these large corporate entities that are ripping this off, destroying our democracy, flooding us with illegal money. Democracy is in the street. Go out and heckle these people down. Go out and challenge the Tea Party movement, these group of right-wing ignoramuses that are destroying our country. Democracy and freedom are in the street. The election process is there to articulate the real issues of the people from the bottom up, and nothing will change unless people take to the streets. That's Bob Fitrakis here at Fight Back, and with Cliff Arnebeck, who fights every day in the courts. It's a multi-pronged, it's, as we used to say, one struggle, many fronts. In the court, make Rove accountable. Connie and her friends in the streets and actually running people that have an opinion and point of view and realize there's robber barons out there, war profiteering people who make money off death and destruction, and we need to fight against them.
This has been Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.